shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. What episode is this? This is like 263, I think. See, I was fooled by my notes. I wrote the wrong note down. Oh, alas. Well, we're getting into the break here. The combination of my break and people in the Breadbox world's break and all that is going to look like we're pretty much just going to do a hiatus until the first of the year after this show. So I need a little time off anyway. And my producer, Jennifer, will be around next week. So if I come up with something that just has to be said, we'll do that. But I'm going to pick out, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick out some of my favorite, my greatest hits, because some of my favorite episodes from the history of the show. And, pray for me. I'm just trying to think about, this new year, there's a lot changing. I've got some big announcements coming up. Part of what I'm going to do with the time off when I'm not doing the show here in the next couple of weeks is kind of think about what I want to do with the show. And so, I want to ask everyone that is part of this show, that are listeners that care, that are involved in my life in some way through this show or otherwise, to give me feedback. If you're a listener of this show, give me some feedback. Shoot me an email, thecounterposition@gmail.com, and tell me what you like and what you don't like, or what you'd like to hear more of. Do you want more interviews? I'm really been for the whole time I've been doing this, and I finally got a ringer, which I think is a really cool tool, and I'm going to be playing with it over the break. And I think Mark Giesecheck and I may try to do a new episode of the Over the Counter podcast and try out Ringer in the process. But if I got Ringer up and running, which I'm pretty excited on, Alex Bloomberg and Gimlet Podcast Network are using Ringer and endorsing it. It seems like a pretty easy way to do really solid interviews quick and at a distance. So that opens up a ton of connections I have. So I could take this thing into a much more kind of interview guest-oriented direction. I could there's a lot of options I could do. So I'm really interested in kind of I mean I don't have a vast audience at the moment, but there's a few hundred of you out there for sure, maybe more. And I would love to know what you guys like and what you don't like, and what you'd love to hear more of. That's the main thing. So if you give me some feedback, I'll let you kind of, I'm assuming that my current audience is, indicative of the makeup of kind of the larger audience. I don't think there's some huge demographic that I'm missing out on. I do want to kind of take this farther and farther away from kind of the strictly Catholic bubble and start talking about things, from a little more universal perspective more and more, and, from the Catholic principles for sure. But, less topical, less theological topical stuff, and more going outside of that, those things that only we would kind of be interested in, so to speak, inside the Catholic bubble. I don't know if I really include myself inside the Catholic bubble. Anyway, so that's what we're going to be doing. So this is probably the last show. This is most likely going to be the last show until you hear a New Year's show. And if that just makes your holidays hard, then you're just going to have to bask in the glory of the greatest hits. All right, let's get to it. Weekend recap Monday, as is my tradition. It's kind of a weird weekend. So Friday, I was off from the day job. And so we had a nice little... me and, if you listen to the show on Friday, you know that me and Jim Laurent were hanging out. So on Friday, me and Ducky went to we went to Mass down here at Mother of God, a couple blocks from the house, and then we went over to Little India and got Indian buffet. and I was good. I've been wanting to try this. So it's probably a little too much information, but me and chickpeas, me and garbanzo, chickpea flour, yeah, not so much. One of the only things that it makes me, I'm not a big fan of that blood type diet. I think that thing's been disproven pretty hard. They found all the blood types during the Paleolithic era. So it's not, his premise is kind of false there. But one thing that that I think he gets dead right, at least for this type A, is that we do not do well with chickpeas. And I kept thinking it was spices because my stomach would just get trashed every time I go eat Indian food. And I love Indian food. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love Indian food. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe it's just, I found out that these little vegetable fritters are fried in the chickpea flour. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to eat gluten. I'm not going to eat the naan, and I'm not going to eat any of the stuff made with the chickpea flour. They might use it a little bit to thicken some of this other stuff. And so I said a little bit of rice, camped out on sog paneer, butter chicken, tandoori chicken, and whatever that the yummy, delicious yellow cauliflower and potato stuff. Anyway, I did that, and I didn't eat the naan, and I didn't eat the little fritters that I always eat. And sure enough, my stomach didn't get trashed. So I'm excited. So I can go back to Indian food because there's a really killer, delicious Indian buffet like right by my house, right by my weekday mass church. And now I figured out what it was. So I know too much information, but you know, figuring out food intolerances in this world is a very important thing to do. So, yeah, so we went to Indian food, and I didn't eat the chickpea, and I didn't get sick or get a bad stomach. So, and then we came back here and we did an interview, which you can listen to. It's number 262, I believe. And then we went to see Rogue One down at the RPX, the Continental, on Monica, right there. Yeah, you don't need to know that. You don't live in Denver. The one right there, 25 and Hamden, that one. Yeah. We went to see Rogue One. I think it's the I don't know if it's the Denverite in me or the ex-Californian in me that, you know, I want to tell you, I honestly almost did tell you because there was a big traffic jam. I came really close to doing the SNL California thing. Yeah, you know, I just went down to Butchel to the Colorado and cut across there on Yale, and then I just went down Monica. Yeah, it's like I'm telling you, in California, that's the reason everyone talks about traffic because the weather never changes. In Missouri, we talk about the weather because it changes every 5 minutes. But the traffic changes, so you gotta have to make small talk. Anyway, so we went and saw Rogue One, and you know, here's the thing: is that I'm gonna talk about Rogue One later. So, spoiler alerts coming. Spoiler alert. Spoilers coming, or not really, but kinda. But the only thing I'll say is, you know, I did something that I haven't done in a long time. Me and Ducky got the combo, and we got a big old thing of popcorn and some sodies. And sodies. Got some big sodies and some candy and stuff. Like, so we're like, it's totally bad. And it's been a long time since I just like went to the movies with somebody and had like a bottomless, huge bucket of butter popcorn. And I tell you what, I just about made myself sick on popcorn. That was brutal. So anyway, I'm so stoked. I got to the theater. And I got like the best parking spot, like closer than the handicap spots, like the single best parking spot in the lot was open right when I pulled up. So I knew that was a sign that it was going to be a good night. Then popcorn gluttony, Rogue One, hear more about that later. And then, so then I got out, and so it had been 61 degrees. And then it was like 44, 45 the day that we went and saw this. And then it was going to just like turn into Siberia overnight. And so sure enough, it was getting colder and colder. And I was going to go get a swim in after the movie. And because Ducky had to go visit his stepmom or something. So I was going to go get a a swim in, maybe get a hot tub and some steam in and kind of do the hot cold thing, swim for a while. And I decided, you know, I just got a feeling that this is going to hit a little quicker than they're saying. So I wanted to get some food. So I went to Trader Joe's, and by the time I got to Trader Joe's, it was already snowing like pretty good. So I got a brisket and some vegetables and a bunch of stuff, and I made a pretty dang nice brisket. Let's end the break with the brisket. Let's end the segment with the brisket. So I got one of those big briskets from Trader Joe's, you know, just some Malda and flaky sea salt, a little bit of that new, I mean, I tell you, I've been using that, that grass-fed beef tallow from Epic that you can buy at Whole Foods for everything for my frying purposes when it comes to like meat like that. So I put a little tallow in, brown that up, and then I just got a big catering foil, a big old long catering foil pan, and I just put, you know, rough cut carrot, celery, onion, put some little small potatoes right in there from the beginning, some whole pieces of garlic, cracked black pepper, more sea salt, and then I put in some Shania Monastrell box wine, which is really good box wine, by the way, and boxed beef stock from Trader Joe's, and then I reconstituted some porcini mushrooms and put the mushrooms and the liquid in, 300 degrees for about 4.5 hours. Bam, absolutely amazing. All right, so let's go to the break, and when we get back, I got more in my sleeve. You're listening to The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
Let my sacred word to mutter, ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so what are we talking about? Oh, brisket. Yeah, so I tell you what, man, I don't know why I don't make brisket every weekend. This is spectacular. It's so easy. I mean, I'm telling you, if there's one cooking method that everyone on earth should learn, it's braising. Braising is just cooking a cheaper cut of meat, usually at a very low temperature for a very long time, usually with some kind of a moisture in the pan. So you can take that's how you make pot roast or chuck roast or whatever. And you can use stock, you can use wine, you could do. I saw a great beef roast and Barolo recipe the other day. That's kind of why I wanted to put a lot of wine in it. All I did was rosemary and garlic, red wine, beef stock. I tell you what, another thing that you can, if you make braises and stews and soups and stuff, go to Restaurant Depot, Costco, someplace like that. Buy one of those big old tubs. There's like 20, 30 bucks for it, but it'll last you forever. Like a huge tub of dried porcini mushrooms or dried wild mushrooms. I'm telling you, those things just add so much flavor to everything. And so I just reconstituted some of those in a little hot water. You can use some hot stock. You don't want to pour it all the way out because they got a little bit of grit in them. Sometimes I forgot to do that. I call it a little grit. But that's it. And then rosemary. I put rosemary in it. So you do that. Just pile a bunch of stuff into a big Dutch oven works. But you don't want to boil it, though. You want it to have water. You want the liquid to be in the bottom, but not surrounding the meat, right? So you need something wide. So I love to use catering foils. There's another tip. The three things that I buy at Restaurant Depot, if you have a Restaurant Depot nearby and you have a business license, you can get a card. But there's other restaurant places. Smart and Final out in California, you could get this stuff from them. There's restaurant supply stores. The things that I buy from my home kitchen from restaurant stores are full size and half size catering foils with their lids that go along with them. I mean, they're just good for everything, especially for like potlucks and stuff like that. so easy to braise in and cook in. You want to make a bunch of rice, you can make it like restaurants make it in the oven. There's just so many things you can do with the catering foils. I buy the 32-ounce kind of like deli soup containers with the plastic, with the plastic lid. I mean, if you ever look inside any chef's refrigeration at the shop or at their home, you'll see those little containers everywhere. Just kind of think, if you ordered a big bowl of soup from for takeout from a Chinese place, what it comes in, and you just masking tape and a Sharpie to put what it is and dates on them. I tell you what, that'll just change how you run your kitchen. And the final thing is the dried mushrooms, man. I'm telling you, dried mushrooms are just like, they're hard to find anywhere other than at like restaurant stores, like Restaurant Depot. I think Costco has them too. You can just use those for absolutely everything. They're just so good in any, I've rarely tasted anything that doesn't do better when you do that. I was talking about, I put red wine in it and I mentioned Shania Monastrell. So box wines, I want to talk about box wines for a second. I'm on a culinary rant here. mostly because I don't want to talk about the Electoral College. I don't want to talk about terrorism. I don't want to do yet another Christmas show you're going to be listening to. But, yeah, Shania has a Shania Red and Shania White. It's a Spanish Monastrell. And, you know, in the last little bit, these cask wines have become very popular. There's a lot of them. Perry West is in the room. Hi, Perry.
Hey.
I thought I was home alone. I'm recording in my living room, and then Perry came home. You look really pretty, Perry. Thanks. Hey, speaking of, thanks to Jennifer for promoting Perry's new record on Breadbox's Facebook page. And you should go check out A Half Glass Full by Perry West, available on Spotify, iTunes, and all over the place. That's an impromptu commercial for my roommate's record because he came in the room while I was trying to record. Anyway, so cask wines. You know, I remember Andrea Emmer, who's one of the first big kind of like cultural icons, or like one of the first big kind of celebrity master sommeliers. And she wrote some books about some of the early books that kind of intro to wine before it became such a huge thing. And I remember Andrea Emmer saying that that she thought the bag in the box was a perfect enclosure. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. It's because most of the wines you're going to be buying in that kind of an enclosure are not stuff you want to age anyway. So it keeps the oxygen out. You don't have to gas your wine. You can have one glass a night. I'm a big fan of cask wine. That's what they call box wines now, that they're kind of nice, that they call them cask wines. And of all of them that are commonly available, Shania Monastrell is really, really worth drinking. I mean, it's good for cooking with. You know, $22, it's the equivalent of four bottles. You can deglaze a pan with it, but you can drink a glass of it too. Always keep that around. I usually have a box of red and a box of white around just for cooking and for a quick sip. Worth doing. Cask wines. Everybody's gotten used to good wines having screw caps on them now, but we're finally starting to get used to good wines being able to be put into a cask like that. All right, so enough with the culinary stuff. Let's finish up weekend recap here. Started really digging into Tools for Titans by Tim Ferriss. But there's a lot of good information in there. I'm still kind of in the like workout diet thing. D'Agostino and a couple, who else was Pasquale in there, had great stuff about ketosis. He's got some really interesting tricks and tips on fasting and what kind of the reboot that fasting can be if it's done right. And some really incredible research about how a 3 to 5 day fast can actually purge almost all your precancerous cells if you don't have cancer. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's just it goes to show you that there's a reason that every civilization, every religion in the history of the world has kind of subconsciously and kind of like made fasting an aspect. It's just something left over from our Paleolithic era too, is that we just wouldn't have food sometimes. This idea that you need to eat three meals every single day is just not really true. So that Tools for Titans, I'm digging it. It was worth buying so far. And this is just, if you're a Tim Ferriss author, podcaster, television guy, he has a podcast and he just took the best tricks and tips from all of his guests over the last 100 episodes or whatever, and put them into a book. And he interviews some big guns. So I've only gotten through most of the stuff about workouts and eating, but it's really, really interesting. And I'm a big fan of Ferriss. He does a great service by guinea pigging himself on all this stuff, then figuring out what works and telling us about it. Went to the gym yesterday, got a good swim in, cause I missed my swim on Siberia shift night. Of course hot tub was dead. It seems like every Sunday they clean the hot tub on Sunday mornings. And I mean, how long does it take for a hot tub to heat up? I don't know. There's just been trouble. I think they need to replace the heater on this hot tub, but no big. I've been all about the sauna and the cold shower combo, and I got bored. Sometimes I can go in there to sit in the hot tub for a while, and I end up not swimming. But I was going there to swim. Every time I go, I'm kind of going to swim most of the time, unless I'm really sore. So this time I managed to get a really good swim in. I don't know, like 1,000 meters. You know, maybe 1,500, somewhere between there. I swam for a long time, you know, the better part of an hour. And I swam pretty aggressively until some old lady with like these weights, these water weights and stuff, just decided to, without asking, to come take over the good side of my lane and make me swim next to the wall where there's kind of a little wake and it makes it hard to take a breath on the right side. And I'm just like, you know what? Fine. I'll get out. And this, I just got pushed out of my lane by some old lady. I hate sharing a lane. Griping about swimming on the show now. Anyway, I had a great swim in. I was about done anyway. And still just like every time I go to the gym, someone figures out that I'm going from the hot to do a cold shower, and they're amazed by it. And they want to ask me about it. Why are you doing that? Tim Ferriss and Tools for Titans talks about, he has a chapter with Wim Hof, the Iceman, the guy behind, you know, Laird Hamilton's all into him. Tim Ferriss is all into him. Michael Miley from Rival Sons, all into Wim Hof, Justin Schneer, drink, all into Wim Hof and the Wim Hof method. So one thing I'm going to try to do over my break in the next week or so is swim a little more. And I'm going to try to do these breathing exercises in a more organized way that Wim Hof has you do. But I'm definitely down. I'm really getting into wanting the cold shower. I mean, it's if you haven't done that, it's worth doing. And finally, I went to Mass instead of going to Divine Liturgy, just because I just lollygagged, and I got up too late and lollygagged and missed liturgy. So I went to Mass over Our Lady of Lourdes, and I was kind of bummed because Father Larkin, Brian Larkin, wasn't preaching, and I just love listening to Father Brian Larkin. So it was the old Capuchin guy who I can't remember his name, but it's no Brian Larkin, man. Brian's like one of my favorite preachers in Denver. He's tied for my favorite preacher in Denver. All right, let's go to the break. When we get back, I'm going to quit talking about the weekend. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. See you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging in a dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so here's the plan for the rest of the show. Now that I meant to do like two one segment of catch up, but you know me, I end up getting distracted by things like brisket, things you can buy in restaurant stores, cask wines. Those were all like not on the notes. All right. So today is the day that the Electoral College has to officially elect Donald Trump as our next president. Well, they'll have to, but they're gonna. There's been a lot of talk about the Electoral College. I thought it was kind of funny that Trump and his supporters had been big critics of the Electoral College, and then that's what allowed them to win. And I think, and that he didn't back off of his criticism of the Electoral College, even though Hillary won the popular vote, and he only won because of the Electoral College. And people asked him, do you want to change your position now that this helped you out? And he said no. And now I see why, is because there has been a push, and there is theoretically a possibility that the Electoral College could not elect him. They could not. And see, this is just a good moment. You know, so I think we're stuck with the orange one. You know, I think it's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure. But there's something that we have to think about here. Well, two things that you want. There's two things I want to talk about this. One is that someone pointed out that, yes, Hillary won 2.5 million more votes than Trump did. But she won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College. We are not a direct democracy. We are a representational republic. So there's a reason why someone like Plato hated the idea, Aristotle, they didn't like the idea of just a strict democracy, because it's mob rule, right? A lot of people are calling for mob rule because it would have prevented Trump. And who knows, maybe. But so if the Electoral College denied Trump the presidency, got together and gave it to, let's say, a more sane Republican, it wouldn't be a bloodless coup. It would not be what everyone's trying to make this out to be. It would be functioning. It'd be a constitutional slippery slope, people are saying. No, it would be exactly what the founding fathers put that in there for. If the populace loses their mind and elects some kind of tyrant or something, then the Electoral College can actually, this group of people who are supposed to be kind of the best and brightest among us that we vote for, we acknowledge them from each of our local areas. We say, hey, here's what we want. They're supposed to kind of keep us from doing something stupid. I don't think they're going to. And there wasn't anything not stupid to do after we ended up with these final two running. But anyway, it's interesting that this is in the news. I mean, we are a representational republic. We are not a democracy, properly speaking, in the sense of like one man, one vote, mob rule. That's not what we are. We're a mixed system, and it works. And so if they shot him down and he didn't get to be president, I would even claim it worked even better. But I don't think it's going to work that well, unfortunately. The other thing is that I noticed, I was reading an article and it said that it was 2.5 million votes. That basically comes down to California. if you took California out of it, then you have a pretty solid election of Donald Trump, both popular and electoral. It's another example of like, there seems to be just two halves of this country right now. There is, and it's always been the case. I mean, I grew up in Southern Missouri, and the state next door is amazing. It's Illinois. So you have Chicago and the area around Chicago, and then you have the rest of the state. And it basically breaks down into like, if you just drew a line just south of Chicago, you'd have a red state full of rural, except for Carbondale. There's a one little college town holdout. But other than Carbondale, there it's basically just a rural red state with an extremely liberal city in the middle of it. And that's kind of what's going on in a lot of places. Look at California even. If you split California down the middle, California, the entire right side of the state, if you split it down the middle, is red. And then when you look at the coast, every other county is red, blue, just about. And the reason why is that the cities are all blue and the rural areas are red. So there's it's interesting. There's a growing distinction between the people in this world that are growing, working on, building, manufacturing, D all the above, the stuff that we take for granted, and the people who spend all of their time pushing pencils and pushing pushing keyboards instead of pushing something heavy around. there's a distinction happening in America, and what is important to each of these people. And I think it got reflected. I think this was, we saw the role of the Rust Belt. We saw the role of formerly Democratic voters that are union workers and stuff. I think that that explains Trump. And you just see California has become just, I love California. If you haven't noticed on the show, I lived there for 11 years. I adore California. Like if I wrote a bestseller, I made a bunch of money, I would live probably just south of Santa Barbara somewhere, Carpinteria, someplace in that area. I would live in the South Central Coast of California. I love California. But man, they have governmentally and culturally, it's just gone off the rails. And it's just, so there's a good example how kind of different than the rest of the country that place was. And I mean, I'm not saying that the rest of the country was right. I'm just pointing out that there was just a deep difference between the two. Finally, I want to talk about, I don't want to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about this, you know, not too long ago, I remember having a show and I did a segment where I'm like, you wake up and you just turn on the news and you look at all the different little news links on the page and you go, gosh, this looks like this literally looks like the kind of news that you would see in a near future science fiction movie. It's just nuts. I mean, today headlines, Turkish security guard kills a Russian diplomat on camera. More terror in Berlin. Someone drove a truck through a Christmas market. I mean, I'm getting to where it's just like, I don't even notice this stuff hardly anymore. I'm like, oh yeah, a dude got killed. Oh yeah, terrorists killed a bunch of people innocently trying to go to a Christmas market. Yeah, pretty normal. I mean, I'm starting to get numb to it because it's just kind of morphing into the other things that I see on a screen someplace. And I'm just not okay with that. And especially because it's like sitting right next to like, oh, giant avatar robot. Study shows that lonely men were more likely to have sex with robots. that was on the same page. You know, so someone killed a Russian diplomat, terror in Berlin, lonely men have been deemed not surprisingly to be the most likely to take to have sex with these new robots that they're building. A big giant fighting robot with a dude inside it, like in an Avatar, like literally like those big scary robots, like the guy would climb in and they'd run around. They got one of those. They're working on that. I'm just saying that I don't know what I have no point here. I'm just this. I'm on the couch and you're my therapist, and I'm just telling you that I'm just not okay with how numb I am becoming to death and to weirdness and to our society going off the rails. I can remember I can remember if you saw video footage of someone getting killed. I mean, that was a huge thing at one point. Now they're just like, they're cutting people's heads off on the internet. It's just amazing to me that this is something. Death is becoming entertainment, or at least it's new. It's becoming news, but news is becoming entertainment. And it's, I'm telling you, this is straight up out of some kind of a science fiction movie. I don't know what to do with it. You know, and speaking of, when we get back from the break, I want to talk about Rogue One, and there's going to probably be a spoiler or two in there, but I mean, at this point in the game, you're going to hear this tonight. I'm going to name it. I'm going to put it in the title. So spoiler alert, you know, if you know, but I'm not going to really spoil too much, but I am going to talk about stuff that I want to talk about this entertainment in this movie in the context of that. And if I get done, I'm going to try to get a little quick, a quick little part of a segment about what in the world we're doing and why this is Christmas time and what that means and why it affects all of this stuff. You know, instead of just presents and Santa Claus and all that. All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Riley. We'll see you after the break.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. Well, here we go. So I went and saw Rogue One. So once again, spoiler alert. I am going to talk about Rogue One. It's only been out for a weekend. Chances are, if you're someone who loves Star Wars enough to where you would be pissed off about spoilers, you've probably already seen Rogue One. But if not, I'm going to talk about Rogue One. And I'm going to talk a little bit about... I'm not actually going to talk about like too much big spoilers or anything. So, okay, let me just say, I thought the movie was great. I mean, I'm old enough to have gone and seen the original Star Wars, like in the theaters. I remember going. I remember being a little kid pretending a broomstick was a lightsaber. You know, it's like when there was only one movie out. I had the lunchbox. Okay. It's like so this is kind of in my bones, so to speak, you know, but I haven't watched the Clone Wars. I haven't read any of the novels. I haven't taken part in the broader expanded universe. I'm not one of those guys. I have trouble even remember the plot points from the original movies. Haven't seen them in a while. So I just have like this vague emotional attachment to the concept of Star Wars. Right. But this movie was great. It was really great. It was kind of a standalone film. I didn't go in expecting... I expected it to be a standalone film and not have any bearing. But it explained a lot. So here's where the spoiler parts come in. The entire plot line... I mean, and I think that this is the reason they did this. Is because there's just been this constant like plot hole. Like, why would they make such an absolute easy way to destroy the Death Star? There's even a really funny video on the internet where this guy that designed the Death Star supposedly is just like, he's like, I've been force choked. I've been regular choked. I've been beaten up and all this because I designed that ventilation shaft. It's a giant weapon the size of a planet. It causes a lot of exhaust. There has to be a ventilation. You should thank me that I made it so small, you know. But it turns out it wasn't a mistake. It was a design flaw put in it on purpose. And it's interesting that they were the way that they were able to kind of like put this all together and make it relevant, it's basically the stuff that happens in the days, months, like right before the original movie. You're like, oh, so it's, I thought it was ingenious the way they did it. So that was fun. One thing that freaks me out is they brought two or three actors back completely through CGI. And people were talking about how, what is his name? Tarkin looked a little shaky and there's some lines around him. I didn't notice it cause I hadn't read that that was going. It didn't occur to me. He looked familiar, but it didn't occur to me that this was a now dead actor being brought back to life by CGI. So I didn't notice it. I'm pretty good at suspending belief during a movie though. So, suspending disbelief. I mean, so I didn't notice it. So I didn't notice anything. I'm amazed. And when they did, they show a young Princess Leia at the end, and it's amazing that they can do that. They're getting to where they can use CGI to basically have actors that, you know, are dead now play entirely new roles. I mean, that is amazing to me. I started thinking about like, well, does he get royalties on that? Does his images being used? Does his family get some money for that? That's what I was thinking about once I realized who it was. The movie is pretty violent. It put the war back in Star Wars. It's kind of a war film, set in that world, but it shows the gritty kind of reality of kind of rebel warfare and, you know, resistance. And you can see that this universe was a universe, you know, this galaxy that's a set in is in a really, 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 a serious state of war, you know? So that was interesting. You know, what's funny though, is that after watching, the last Star Wars and seeing, John Boyega's character, take his helmet off, and, you know, I don't know if I just vaguely as a kid, I thought stormtroopers were maybe like robots or something. I never thought of them as, and they were just these faceless, disposable things. So when they kill them or shoot them, I don't think like, oh, hey, it isn't the same as like when you see someone in the opposite uniform in a war film get blown up or something. It was just like, they were kind of like, it was almost like when you're watching The Walking Dead and like, well, they're zombies. They're not really people anymore. It was like, I don't know what I thought stormtroopers were until when he took that helmet off and you saw and you heard his backstory. It made this edgier and a little, it was hard to see. It wasn't as easy to just watch all these stormtroopers just shot in droves, because knowing his story made you realize it made it more real. It made it more like a real war where these were actual people usually forced in the fighting, at least based on his character's arc. Pretty interesting. There's been a lot of talk about the diversity in the film. The rebels are just like a cast of characters from every possible race you can imagine, with a female lead. And it was definitely not the original Star Wars were like American white dudes fighting British white dudes. You could tell who was a good guy or a bad guy, not in every instant, but kind of by the accent, you know. And it's funny, there were so many moments in this film where I couldn't help but hear that Eddie Izzard bit about, you know, because General Lafayette helped America, we always have this love for French characters. And because of the Revolutionary War, the British are always the bad guys. Every time we need a really calculating, you know, purposely evil bad guy, it's always got a guy with a British accent, you know. He talks about how the Death Star is full of British accents, and and after having talked about how the Brits took over the world with the cunning use of flags, he has this really great exchange about, the guy comes and says, "Sir, it's the rebels, sir. They're here." And he's, "My God, man, do they want tea?" "So I think they have something rather more in mind, sir. They brought a flag." "Dash cunning of them." There were moments in this film that I kept waiting for that actual dialogue. It's like these two pasty British guys. Hello, what is it, Lieutenant? I've just kept waiting for that Eddie Izzard bit to break out. Always a good excuse to use it to do an Eddie Izzard bit. The final thing I want to say about Rogue One is, and I saw a friend of mine on Facebook talking about this. It's like, okay, yeah, so they built a big Death Star. Now they built a bigger Death Star in these other ones. And then they built like, so in the new one, they built a bigger Death Star. Now this is now it's about, oh, here's where the flock is. Like, okay, could we get a plot point, like a major plot point other than the Death Star? It's like, it's going to be like, you know, I keep getting the feeling that like, you know, the new, you know, was it going to be, you know, eight Star, you know, the new one in the series is going to come out, and Kylo Ren is going to, Adam Driver's character is going to walk out on stage in a black turtleneck, you know, looking like Steve Jobs, and be like, you know, we've been making these Death Stars bigger and bigger, but you know, and he's now, I'd like to introduce just one more thing. It's new Death Star Mini, you know? Yeah. Just claps and people are tweeting, you know, just, they're going to, I just feel like this is like each one of these has turned into like an excuse to do a product release on the new Death Star. I think the Empire and is going to slowly turn into like Apple. And it's just going to be like product demonstrations for new compact Death Stars with even stronger death rays. And this one's waterproof. There's no ventilation point, no ventilation chutes. anyway, it was good. I liked it. A lot grittier, a lot more of a war film this time around. Really, really worth going to see. It's just... But like I said, it's, you know, you got to know what you're taking your kids to, you know, what they can handle, what they can't. It's pretty violent though. It's more of a war film. Yeah. So, all right. So speaking of war, there was an invasion, and, 2000 years ago, God invaded, enemy occupied territory, as C.S. Lewis would say it, by becoming human, and the second person of the Trinity became man. And that actually happened back on the Feast of the Annunciation when Mary said yes, because life begins at fertilization. But we got to meet him at Christmas 2000 years ago, and that is what this is all about. So it's about this continuing motive of gift. And the same thing that made God create anything that wasn't himself, to create anything at all, is the same reason that he became man. And the same reason that he continues his incarnation by being present to us in the Eucharist and the bread and wine made body and blood of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And that's what this season is about. It's about the presence of God invading our life in a mode of pure gift. And that's the real news. That is the real drama. That, you know, like Dorothy Sayers, you say, the dogma is the drama. That's the real news, not the Electoral College, not terrorism, not a cool new movie, but that God continues to invade our reality because he wants to be one with us. And this radical, scandalous thing that happened in the incarnation that just sounds absolutely crazy. You know, let's try to put that back in the core while we're talking about this Christmas season. All right, Merry Christmas to everyone if I don't see you before, and let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. See you next time. See you next year.
I'll take your place in my old stone. I'll take your place in my old stone.